Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
Don't let anyone tell you we can't afford to make health care more accessible while saving your hard-earned tax dollars. Don't let anyone tell you we can't afford to fully fund our public schools while cutting taxes at the same time. Don't let anyone tell you we can't afford to support our farmers, our rural communities, and our small businesses while protecting our natural resources and investing in new, clean jobs. Don't let anyone tell you we can't spend within our means while still supporting Wisconsinites who need help to recover. Because they're wrong. We can. I've got a blueprint that will do just that and make sure we bounce back and better than before.
Looks like it's a double-digit increase in spending for our state. Now, at a time when we see people across Wisconsin who are bouncing back on their own because of the actions that Governor Evers has taken, it is ironic that he now calls it the Badger Bounce Back Plan from the very things that in many ways he caused. So there are areas in the budget that I think we will be able to find common ground on. That is one thing I did agree with what Governor Evers said tonight. We have to be able to pass a budget. We have to, of course, get a Liberal Democrat signature, and we have to find ways to work together. It's like it is nothing more than a Liberal Democrat from Madison's wish list to his donors and to his potential voters as he seeks re-election. So to me, this is a clear indicator that Governor Evers is seeking re-election because it's not about the people of Wisconsin. It's about the politics of his own party.
Was a year of challenges and change for the residents of Wisconsin, many of whom are still reeling from the pandemic's economic fallout. For state lawmakers, it was a year marked largely by partisan gridlock as Democrats and Republicans struggled to find common ground. Now Wisconsin is in the midst of its biennial budgeting cycle, bringing new challenges and exposing stark differences between the state's Democratic governor and its Republican-controlled legislature. The question on everyone's minds is, will lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle bridge the divide and come together to help the state move forward? Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. What you just heard was a segment of Democratic Governor Tony Evers' most recent budget address issued last month, followed by a portion of a response from Republican Robin Voss, Speaker of the State Assembly. Today, we welcome two Wisconsin lawmakers who represent the people of Central and North Central Wisconsin for our legislative roundup, a reaction to the governor's February budget address, as well as a look at pending legislation in Madison and how those proposals could impact the people of our region. Joining us today is Republican Representative Calvin Callahan of Tomahawk, who represents the state's 35th Assembly District. His district comprises Lincoln County, Western Langlade, and neighboring towns in Marathon, Oneida, and Shawano counties. Representative Callahan, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today is Democratic Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point, who represents the state's 71st Assembly District, which encompasses Central Portage County. Representative Shankland, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners with questions for our guests can join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742. You can email us as well. That address is Route 51 at WPR.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. So, Calvin, you're newly elected. You replaced Mary Felskowski, who is now in the state Senate. And this is your first year representing the district and participating in the budgeting process. I have to wonder, what is your initial reaction to the governor's budgeting address?
Yeah, well, first off, I hope this is the first of many of these. I was looking forward to this. But yeah, I gotta tell you, it's been very interesting. The first 2 months here and coming into the budgeting process, like I said earlier, it's been like drinking water through a fire hose. My initial response, Speaker Voss had said, there's a lot of liberal wish list items in there, huge increases in taxes. In fact, I believe that this is the biggest percentage of increases since Governor Doyle. But what I can tell you is there's things like broadband expansion for the state that here in northern Wisconsin through the COVID pandemic is becoming it realized that it's a necessity in today's society. We need it for I've talked to parents who had straight A students, but because of the lack of broadband, their kids couldn't go to virtual learning, that they went almost as straight F. So, I mean, there's stuff like that where we can definitely agree on, maybe not necessarily the funding, but definitely points like that.
Thanks, Kelvin. And we'll definitely get into some of these specifics as we get into the program. Katrina, what was your initial reaction to the budget address?
I was excited to see Governor Evers' positive vision for the future of our state. We all agree that 2020 was incredibly difficult. It presented many challenges, financial, health, mental health, and just getting through a difficult year. And I think 2021 in this budget should be about the bounce back. It should be about helping everyone. So for the governor to invest $200 million for small businesses who are affected by the pandemic, I think is incredibly helpful. In addition to so many investments in our infrastructure, whether it's an increase in aid to our local town roads, whether it's a massive investment in broadband and ensuring everyone can get access to broadband is an incredible initiative. And in addition, I think, you know, it's time to talk about, after almost a decade of trying, it's time to talk about expanding access to affordable health care in the middle of a pandemic. And so I think it's important to recognize in this budget, Governor Evers has multiple initiatives that would pay for themselves. So, you know, if he's investing in broadband over in one part of the budget with $100 million, he's also expanding broadband, which saves us hundreds of millions of state dollars. So I think that's an important thing to recognize. And it's also important to recognize that the state is required by law to balance the budget. So I'm looking forward to the budget process, and I appreciate Governor Evers laying out what I think are highly popular ideas and investments, regardless of zip code. So I'm excited to have that debate.
And you both really have made broadband a priority. You've both spoken about how important that is. And Calvin, you've made it clear that this is an important issue for you, especially probably relevant given the rural areas of your district. And is this an area where Republicans and Democrats are really finding that common ground?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that every legislator here in the state of Wisconsin realizes that Wisconsin is lacking in broadband connectivity, especially, in, you know, for me in rural Wisconsin. And actually, some exciting news that my office just told me about is Charter Communications here in the state of Wisconsin released their new goals. And if you look at East and Northern Wisconsin, it's huge, the amount of money that they're going to be putting into the state. But yes, I really think that Democrats and Republicans believe that broadband is huge. Like I said earlier, it is a necessity in the modern society.
I'd also like to talk about the state's unemployment system. Really struggled to keep pace with so many claims over the past year. Governor calling for $79.5 million to modernize the state system. Katrina, what's the plan to make sure that the system works the way it should from this point forward?
Yeah, so let's first start by centering the folks who've been most affected by this, and that's the people who've been waiting for a long time to get their claims processed, to get their appeals adjudicated, and to get their benefits. In many cases, this prevented them from making car payments, making mortgage or rent payments, getting food on the table, affording their medical bills. And I sincerely have been troubled by this massive amount of claims that, you know, frankly, needed to be expedited. And at the end of the day, what I believe we need to do, what I always say about a serious issue, is we need bipartisan and urgent action. So I've been calling for months for us to work together on this issue. And last summer, I think it was July 2020, I worked with some of my colleagues to introduce six, or maybe I think it was eight different bills to speed up unemployment benefits claims. What we discovered is, in addition to the outdated technology, there really are laws on the books in the state of Wisconsin that slow down the process to get the claim. And so what I want to do is focus twofold, not just the technology upgrades, but also making sure we take out those extra hurdles that people have to clear before they can get their benefits, if they're unnecessary and overly burdensome. And that's something that I'll continue to work on. The governor has many of those provisions in his current state budget proposal, so I'll be pushing for those. But I think it's also important to recognize that in February of 2021, the legislature did take its first step, an important first step in the process of reforming the unemployment insurance system. So instead of authorizing the funds, which I would have supported, what it did was it authorized the state of Wisconsin to put out an RFP to find, you know, request for proposals to find the contractor to upgrade the system. And then it directs the state of Wisconsin to leverage all federal funds in order to upgrade the system. And then they'd have to come back and get state dollars. The governor had asked for a special session and $5 million to start that process. And unfortunately, that did not happen. The $5 million didn't happen. But in the special session, on a nearly unanimous basis in both houses, we were able to get the first step authorized. And that's important, but I will say it's nothing if we can't go further. And so I will continue to beat the drum on the need for us to fund the upgrades, but also to take a look back at all the laws in place over the last few years that have slowed down the process of getting one's benefit.
So, Calvin, expanding on this issue a little bit, Republicans have said Evers didn't do enough to eliminate the backlog. Democrats have blamed Republicans for the delays. Been a lot of finger pointing, but all blame aside, what do you think needs to happen to fix the unemployment system?
Yeah, well, kind of going back on what Representative Shanklin said earlier is, when I first came into the legislature, we touched on the DWD UI systems. And with this legislation, this is another way that we're going to address the UI backlog to make sure this never happens again. I was very happy to see, as one of the first things that I was able to be a part of, a unanimous vote to direct Governor Evers to modernize the UI computer systems at DWD. Through an amendment, it also protected businesses, schools, and local governments from lawsuits and provided relief for those who lost their jobs. There's some provisions in there that exempts the UI 1 week waiting period through March 14th, civil liability exemption language, provides benefit charging, work share, and extended benefit provisions, and ultimately required the DWD to issue a request within 30 days for the computer upgrade project, which must begin by June 30th of this year. The bill requires federal funds to be used first before we use state dollars, the governor already had the ability to procure and finance a new computer system through the state master lease system, but he never did. But again, this is I'm proud to say that this was bipartisan and one of the first votes that I was able to take as a new legislator.
Governor Evers' budget includes quite a few proposals that Republicans eliminated from his budget a couple of years ago. One is the plan to institute automatic voter registration at state Division of Motor Vehicles offices statewide. Katrina, why is this something that the governor and many Democrats feel so strongly about? Why will that process work?
Yeah, so automatic voter registration is a bill that I've co-sponsored in past legislative sessions, and I'm excited about, and I know on the federal level, members of Congress are debating that issue as well. I think anytime we work together to make it easier to vote while protecting election security is a win. And when it comes to the hurdles that we've seen voters, especially in the April 2020 election, have to face, no one should ever have to risk their health or their life in order to be able to vote. And I think, you know, in addition to automatic voter registration, the governor also expands early voting and absentee voting access in the budget. And I'm glad he put them in there because I think we saw during the middle of a global pandemic, or actually at the beginning of a global pandemic, how stressed out people were having to make that choice between their health and exercising their democratic right to vote. So I think automatic voter registration is a great thing when people move They tend to forget that they need to vote and update their systems. And I think the way that this is designed and the way the bill has been designed in the past is set to make sure and cross-track records with the DMV, and then voters could opt out if they don't want to be registered. But I think it's a great way to just help people get that first hurdle out of the way, much like the Elections Commission did this summer when they sent several million people an absentee ballot request form, and they could either toss it or they could use it.
So, Calvin, that provision is something that Republicans eliminated 2 years ago. So why is that a pain point? What do you think would be a better way?
Yeah, well, you know, you said eliminated, but this was policy that was in the state budget. And people that follow the state budgeting process, and something that is knowledge to me, is policy such as this is removed from the state budget. It's been done in the past. There's other policies that have been removed. But look, we got a lot of election reform stuff that I know that I'm very interested in. You know, there's some things in there, extending absentee voting and such as that. And my Democrat colleagues are going to say that's going to, you know, provide access for more people to get out and vote, which is great. Voting is such a huge part of our democracy, and I'm a huge advocate for making sure people get out and vote. But we've seen in this previous election that people abuse it. You know, the audit committee right now is looking into allegations, and we got a lot of election reforms coming up. So, and being new, you know, I wasn't around for that in the past, so I look forward to looking at it here going into the future. But it's definitely, you know, there's a lot of election stuff that we need to look at going forward, and I'll definitely be looking at this as well.
Thanks, Calvin. Democrat Katrina Shanklin and Republican Calvin Callahan, both representatives of the Wisconsin State Assembly, are our guests today on Route 51 for our quarterly legislative roundup. It's a look at decisions being made in Madison and the impact on residents in north central Wisconsin. Your questions and comments are welcome. You can join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Republican State Representative Calvin Callahan and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shanklin are here today for our quarterly legislative roundup. It's a look at the legislation they're considering for Wisconsin and how those proposals could affect you. We'd like to hear your questions, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. One thing the governor made clear in his budget address is his position on juvenile justice. And this has been an issue that has been debated over and over. Wisconsin continues to treat some underage defendants as adults in the criminal justice system, and this varies from state to state. And during the address, the governor said he would like to see all juveniles shifted back to the juvenile system, except, of course, a few specific instances. Katrina, do you see any legislative movement in that direction at this time?
I do. I have been on that bill as long as I've been in the legislature, and it's been bipartisan. And I know that over time, the number of co-sponsors has grown, and that, you know, the one concern that the counties expressed that we need to fund it then has been addressed. And so I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do it. I think we're one of just a handful of states that continues to try 17-year-olds as adults. We also know, you know, the brain science of the matter. We know that people's brains aren't really fully, formed probably isn't the right word, but fully addressed in terms of its growth until the age of 25. And so there isn't really any criminal justice reason why we should try all 17-year-olds as adults. The bill that has been bipartisan in the past does make a few exceptions, and it has had strong bipartisan support. So I think it's a smart move for the governor to put it in the budget. It opens up the process for us to debate it, especially given the legislative conversation that we've had surrounding Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. I think this is something we need to look at. And let me point out this. Criminal justice reform has had, across the nation, strong bipartisan support. You've seen groups that are very conservative come together with liberal and progressive groups on these issues. Where you've come together with faith-based groups as well and taxpayer alliances. And so we need to find a better way forward. And I appreciate that the governor is leading on this.
And those exceptions are pretty stark, like homicide, those the most serious crimes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. It's certain felonies. Yes.
Okay. And Calvin, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake juvenile prisons are right in your backyard. I mean, that's right there. So
yes.
This issue must be especially relevant for you, but the governor is calling for the closure of those prisons, replacing them with a new network of state and county juvenile treatment centers. What are you hearing from constituents in your district about this?
Yeah, well, let me first start off by saying that I also, as Representative Shanklin said before, huge supporter of criminal justice reform. But with Lincoln Hills, we've heard a lot of constituents that are definitely very concerned about the facility, how staff deal with these individuals at the facility. But what it comes down to is, you know, the counties that we were looking at for the smaller facilities, I guess in the past when I wasn't there, had turned down taking over these smaller facilities. Ultimately, what people here in the district are telling me is they want the jobs. The jobs are important to the people here in the area. The facility is important to the people in the area. Maybe not in the capacity it's serving now, but I'm definitely supportive of criminal justice reform, like you talked about earlier, and making sure that facility stays in the area.
Listeners, you are welcome to call in with questions for our guests. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Let's shift to healthcare. Katrina, you mentioned this earlier, and I know healthcare continues to be a major sticking point for Wisconsin lawmakers. A number of healthcare-related items in the governor's budget proposal, and I want to ask both of you to weigh in on your thoughts on these issues. One, again, Medicaid expansion, expanding the state's Family Medical Leave Act, and develop a state-administered public option health plan. Katrina, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on these healthcare issues?
Yeah, so I think we have seen the stark contrast between the states that have already expanded Medicaid, both red and blue states and purple states, and the states that haven't. And if you look at the number of years that the state has turned down the Medicaid expansion, our federal tax dollars coming back to us, to our state, we've lost hundreds of millions of dollars. And in this budget alone, we have the opportunity to cover tens of thousands of Wisconsinites with affordable health insurance and save the state more than $630 million in state tax dollars. Now, you can imagine what we could use that savings for. That could help us invest in our infrastructure, our broadband, mental health, you name it. So in addition to expanding Medicaid, which I strongly support, the governor also has a focus in his budget on lowering prescription drug prices, which was part of his prescription drug affordability task force. He took many of the recommendations in there. I recently heard from a constituent who would love to get her medicine, which costs, I think, $1,200 a month, from Canada, where it's much, much cheaper. And we can't import drugs right now, prescription drugs from other countries. The governor proposes that we do that in addition to other things. And I also think, you know, it's a pandemic. We know that there are people who are struggling to make ends meet, that who are having difficulty even accessing care, let alone getting their prescription drugs. We have to really take a look from our policy standpoint at the most vulnerable and make sure we're serving their needs. The number of people who have unfortunately not been able to access care either due to the wait times at one point throughout the pandemic and therefore delaying the care, or because they were concerned about exposure to the coronavirus, I'm concerned about their long-term health. And I think that the legislature needs to start thinking outside of the pandemic. How are we making sure people get back into preventative care and into treating their chronic health issues? And I think one of the ways to do that is by making the cost of medicine and the cost of medical care more affordable and covering more people with affordable insurance.
Calvin, what are your thoughts on Medicaid expansion and these kinds of proposals? What are you hearing when you take the temperature of the residents in your district? What are you hearing about this?
Yeah, so healthcare overall, a big topic, a lot to it. But Currently, through the Affordable Care Act, residents of Wisconsin who are just living above the poverty line are already eligible for no-cost coverage. The premium costs for someone who is making between $13,000 and $17,000 are as low as 18 cents per month. So that's, $350 a year. I mean, with this option, there's no cost to the state taxpayers. The exchange subsidies are fully paid by the federal government. Wisconsin were to cover these individuals through the expansion of Medicaid, state taxpayers would be responsible for 10% of the cost. Wisconsin is one of the top states with the highest rates of insured residents. We've done this without opening the door to unsustainable expansion of welfare benefits. A study from a couple years ago from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and the Center for Research on Wisconsin Economy at UW-Madison, Medicaid expansion will result in higher costs for individuals and families with private insurance. This study estimates that on average, the cost of an individual's plan would rise by $177 per year, and for a family of four would raise it by $700 a year. So I think we have a good system right currently. Wisconsin, again, is one of the top 10 states with the highest rates of insured residents, and there's no gap between Medicaid in the state and the ACA. So, and that's great.
One of the things that people were really talking about when they heard about these budget proposals was perhaps one of the most controversial pieces of policy, and that is marijuana legalization. Governor Evers calling for total legalization for recreational marijuana. Republicans say this is a non-starter. Katrina, can you explain why? What impact would that have on the state's budget?
Absolutely. So first of all, it would be a new revenue source. And starting in the second year of the budget, if it were to pass, it would generate more than $165 million per year. And that is a significant amount. And I personally, as a legislator who's looked into this policy over the years, I've spoken with legislators from Colorado about this to ask them, what went well and what didn't. And my interest in this isn't just, the economic side of things. I also think this is an issue that continues to be prevalent in the Midwest since Wisconsin is mostly an island at this point. Most of the states around us now have either legalized medical marijuana or recreational cannabis. And, if people are going to other states for this, I think it also makes sense for us to look at this policy. When it comes to growing cannabis and jobs for farmers, I think there's a piece to our local economy that also needs to be examined. When we legalized industrial hemp, the farmers that I heard from were very interested in expanding opportunities. And I feel like this is a great opportunity for the state to talk about the benefits of legalization and what are the downsides to at least not even having decriminalization. And I think, the issue, the racial disparities especially concern me. And when it comes to those who are prosecuted for marijuana possession in Wisconsin, there's a significant racial disparity and there's a racial justice aspect of this as well. And so what I like about the governor's budget is, in addition to legalizing it and bringing in that new revenue, he would reinvest about $80 million in the funds to communities across the state through what's called a community reinvestment fund. And that would provide money for grants to community-based organizations, as well as funding the sparsity aid payments to our rural schools. So I think that makes sense. If you're going to legalize marijuana, it makes sense to invest that money back into the communities most affected. And I also think, this could provide a long-term revenue source for the state instead of people basically engaging in tourism to get it from Illinois. So at a minimum, I believe the legislature owes the people of Wisconsin a conversation about it, since polling shows the majority of Wisconsinites are there. But I also think if I can't get my Republican colleagues there, then they need to talk with us about decriminalizing. They need to talk with us about legalizing medical marijuana, because I have so many constituents with severe medical conditions, whether it's people who are going through terminal cancer or other cancer, as well as chronic pain, who would benefit from access to medical marijuana.
And Calvin, I want to ask you about medical marijuana, because I want to point out that your predecessor, Mary Falskowski, now a Republican member of the state Senate, she was a proponent of medical marijuana. Of course, the governor's proposal would go a step further. How do you see legalization happening in 2021 in one way or the other, whether it's recreational or for medical purposes?
Yeah, well, let me go back to Representative Shanklin's question here a little bit. You said that it's in the budget, but again, this is policy. This is policy that is going to be removed from the budget. If this is something that needs to be done, and my colleagues want done, let's do it in a bill. Let's have a public hearing on it. Let's invite people to the state capitol so we can hear the concerns, we can hear the benefits, and somebody coming in such as myself, who is new to this process and new to hearing professionals and people come in to these public hearings, I'd love to hear that. So let's do it as a standalone bill. Somebody introduce it and do it that route, because this is policy. It's going to be removed from the budget process. With that said, recreational marijuana, I've talked to my constituents here in the Northwoods. I've talked to the law enforcement communities, and there are huge concerns about recreational marijuana right now, that we haven't seen the effects that law enforcement has had in Colorado. There's no way for law enforcement, if they were to pull somebody over, there's no way for them to tell if they're under the influence when driving. There's some stuff that we need to tackle first. Medical marijuana, I absolutely agree. It could be an option that the state could look at. Senator Falskowski is a huge proponent of it. I have to have some conversations with her about it to learn more about it before I make an opinion, and I look forward to doing that here in the future. But when it comes down to it, I wish that this would come in as bills, so we could have public hearings on it, so I could learn more about it, so that we go about this a different way.
I promised a friend that I would ask this question. Is this something that would ever go to a referendum, or is that just not how it works? Katrina, maybe you can answer that for me.
That's a great question. I wish we could do that. The state actually doesn't have the ability for the whole state of Wisconsin to go to a binding referendum. So individual municipalities can have binding referenda, but we as a state don't have ballot initiatives. And I've actually always co-sponsored a bill to do that, because I feel strongly that there are issues that are significantly popular among the people of Wisconsin, regardless of party, but that we can't get through the legislature. And I will point out, in the past 8 years, there has been a bill to legalize recreational marijuana in the Capitol, and to my knowledge, it has never received a public hearing. So I truly hope we can get there this session, and we can really bring people together for a thoughtful conversation.
Thanks for answering that question, because it's just one of those things that I think people just don't know. So thank you. One of the issues that you've historically been passionate about, Katrina, is clean water. Where do things stand there? What's happening with clean water?
Yeah, so the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality finished up its work last February in the Assembly. We passed 10 bipartisan water quality bills unanimously. And then in March, the Senate was set to take them up, and they never had a regular session for the rest of the year, which was disappointing. So the bills essentially died with little to no fanfare. The positive news is the vast majority of them have been included in Governor Evers' budget, and I'm hoping to see them get through that way. He has a comprehensive plan to address PFAS contamination. He also has bills similar to the ones we introduced related to well contamination, remediating the wells, testing the wells, and helping farmer-led initiatives that really reduce runoff and protect our groundwater and surface water quality. So I'm excited about that. I plan to work with members of the Budget Committee to try to pass those through the budget, since they are financial, you know, they're fiscal items, like investing in our county conservationists, the boots on the ground to protect our lakes, rivers, and streams from runoff. But I also plan to do whatever it takes, the heavy lifting outside of the budget, to get these bills passed and signed into law.
And Calvin, because these are financial issues, do you think that there's room for common ground on the water quality things?
Yeah, well, first, let me start by saying great work and good job to Representative Shankland for her work with Representative Novak on that Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality. You know, we're blessed with living in a beautiful area, and we're going to keep it that way. Clean water, clean air, bountiful wildlife is something that we all cherish. We want to maintain. And I do believe that there is common ground. We want to protect our natural resources. This is the great state of Wisconsin. I live in northern Wisconsin. I mean, we want to protect our natural resources in our state. So I do believe there is common ground. Absolutely.
You're listening to Republican State Representative Calvin Callahan and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland, our guests today on Route 51's quarterly legislative roundup. When we return, we'll hear more about the slate of proposals currently under consideration in Madison and where they stand in the process today. Your questions are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also email us at route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Katrina Shankland, the Democrat who represents Wisconsin's 71st Assembly District, and Calvin Callahan, the Republican representing District 35, our guests today for our quarterly legislative roundup. It's a look at pending legislation and its potential impact on residents in North Central Wisconsin. We'd like to hear from you too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. You can call 800-780-9742. So, Calvin, earlier this week, you stood with fellow Republican representatives Pat Snyder and Donna Roser in Rothschild. You were publicly calling on Governor Tony Evers to distribute $20 million in CARES funding to rural school districts. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the first press conference that I was able to do. So that was exciting. But look, when it comes down to it, is our rural school districts don't have the resources that larger districts does. Madison, Milwaukee, yet under the Title I formula, the latest round of funding from the governor, they were provided significantly less funding per pupil than larger districts. But, you know, we need to be putting our kids first. The CDC has already said it's safe to return students to school, in-person classroom learning. And this GEAR funding, the $20.8 million that Governor Evers has put in comes from the federal coronavirus relief. And this request is to give some of that money to the school districts that are providing in-person instructions. The requested that those monies go to our rural districts that have been doing it because they've had to keep with the transportation costs and the utility costs that school districts that have been virtual haven't had to experience. So that's, you know, a lot of rural school districts up here in the North Woods have been in person. So I think we need to be rewarding those people, or maybe not necessarily rewarding, but, you know, funding them because they've had to incur these costs that bigger school districts actually are saving a lot of money on.
Well, since we're talking about education, when we look at the budget proposal, education would be the largest driver of new spending in Evers' proposed budget. Looking at increasing state funding for K-12 schools by more than $1.6 billion over 2 years, how will the state afford this funding increase, Katrina? And I mean, is this realistic?
Sure. Well, some of it has to do with the savings. So, for example, you know, that $630 million that we'd saved that I mentioned earlier, if we expanded Medicaid, is built into that. So is the recreational marijuana piece, which would be $165 million. So we're almost there just from those two things alone. But I think, you know, at the budget committee will be tackling some of these issues. And if they choose to take out the issues I mentioned, then they'll have to balance the budget in a different way. What I like to think about education is, or how I like to think about education is, it's a public good. And our state has not been meeting the commitment, like two-thirds funding, that we need to in order to keep our schools not only safe and open to our kids, but to give them all the resources that they need. So whether it's mental health resources, which are invested in this budget, or whether it's actually getting our special education reimbursement rate up to where it should be after being flat for a decade, for our kids with special needs. I think that our K-12 investment in the budget not only reflects what most people would like to see happen, but also meets our commitment to our kids who deserve the best possible future.
And you mentioned the two-thirds funding. That was actually a benchmark initiated by former Republican Governor Tommy Thompson in 1997. It was repealed by former Democratic Governor Jim Doyle during a budget shortfall. Calvin, I know that many Republicans feel that the K-12 and university budgets are too expensive, and they worry that this is not something that Wisconsin can afford. Is there an alternative you'd like to see?
Yeah, well, first, let me start off by saying that, you know, we've received a lot of contacts about us cutting education funding. When I just like to point out that every biennial budget since 2011, we've actually in 2011 and 13, it was a little over $9.5 billion in funding, and it's always increased since then. We're not going to be cutting anything, and these we're going to be increasing. I mean, currently we said about the 1921 biennial budget is at $12 billion. But when it comes to funding and the two-thirds that the governor has put in there, you know, this is one of the things that being new, I'm definitely looking into and is extremely important to the state of Wisconsin. You know, I'm with JFC or the Joint Finance Committee, and we're watching this very closely and definitely trying to learn as much about it as I can because it's such an important issue in the state.
And Calvin, we have an email from Jean in Mosinee. This question would be for you. In the budget, she points out that the amount paid to townships per acre for county-owned forest acres would go from 30 cents an acre to 63 cents. She says, for small townships, this would be a significant boost to help maintain their roads. She is saying it's assumed this is going to be cut by Republicans. Do you see that happening, Calvin?
Yeah, well, thanks for that question. And actually, I sit on it. Well, I don't know anymore. I resigned recently, but I actually sat on a town board in the little town of Wilson here, very rural, small township. We face this exact problem. So I understand the situation that these townships are in. I like to see it. It looks good. Going forward, I'm definitely going to we're going to be looking into this and to see if we can afford it. You know, all townships, counties, municipalities, and even the state government right now are watching our funding very closely. I'll definitely look into it and see if that's a possibility to keep it at that.
Thank you. And for listeners who have questions of our guests, you can email us route51@wpr.org as Jean did, or you can call 800-780-9742 to join in the conversation. Well, like every state in the union, Wisconsin is also in the midst of redrawing political districts. This is a contentious issue. So far, voters in 28 counties have passed referendums that basically are pleas to the state legislature to change the current redistricting system. Katrina, what are your thoughts on what's going to happen here?
Well, I am excited that we have an opportunity to advocate for fair maps this year as we wait for the census data that will drive the discussion on redistricting. I think it's every policymaker and politician's responsibility to listen to the people of Wisconsin who have overwhelmingly stated that they believe that the people should get to choose the elected officials and not the other way around. So, you know, 55 counties across Wisconsin representing a majority of Wisconsinites back fair maps. And I've always been a co-sponsor of nonpartisan redistricting reform to get politicians out of the way when it comes to drawing maps, because they obviously have self-interest in getting reelected. So what I hope for is that the legislature and governor can agree on a transparent redistricting process, and that we can agree on fair maps that don't give any politician or political party an advantage. But if, you know, if the maps do get unfairly partisan gerrymandered again, I will be one of the first ones to say, you know, we need to fight for fair maps, and I hope the governor will veto any gerrymandered map, and then it would go to the courts. And I think it's notable that Republicans have already retained attorneys for the courts, I think about $1 million retainer so far. And I am concerned about that. But in the meantime, I'm going to be advocating for fair maps because I do believe it's a nonpartisan issue and most voters strongly agree with that.
We'll go to a caller in just a moment. But Calvin, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that. Where do you see this going? Do you think that we'll see a public hearing on bills on redistricting?
Yeah, well, let me first off start off by saying that in the state's constitution, the legislature has the power given to the legislature to draw these maps. And Democrats say, gerrymandering and this and so forth. But when the frank reality is when Democrats were in control, they had the opportunity to do the same thing. But now that they're not, they've decided to go this route. So, the Constitution gives the legislature the power to draw these maps. I look forward to following the Wisconsin State Constitution going forward. I'm sure this is going to end up in the courts again. I'm not for certain. Being new to this, this is definitely one of the most contentious things that I've been a part of. I'll be watching what the governor does, what my Democratic colleagues do, and seeing where we go from here.
Thank you. We have a caller, and it's Fred from Wisconsin Rapids. Welcome, Fred.
Well, hi, guys. Hi, Katrina. Proud Portage County Democrat here. I just wanted to comment on the medical marijuana. Voss was for it. Fitzgerald was against it. Governor Evers was for it. What does it take? Illinois has passed it. Michigan has passed it. Minnesota has passed it. All the states surrounding us are passing it, and we can't get it through. That's my comment. Good luck, Katrina.
Thank you for calling, Fred. Appreciate it. Hey, let's shift to COVID relief legislation. A month ago, the governor vetoed Assembly Bill 1. I know he objected to specific provisions in the bill that he felt would make it more challenging to mitigate the impact of COVID-19. Katrina, where do things stand right now?
Sure. So I was disappointed that the Assembly never got a chance to vote on the bipartisan compromise between the Senate Republican caucus and Governor Evers. He said he would sign the bill. Assembly Democrats said, let us vote on it. And unfortunately, Assembly Republicans amended it multiple times and added in individual provisions that, frankly, I feel everyone knew were non-starters because they would inhibit public health officers' ability to respond to the pandemic. We have several new COVID-19 variants out there. Now is not the time to let up. I know it's tempting to. We're all tired of this pandemic. We all want out of it. But the best way out of it is through it together. And that means using public health interventions based on science and evidence and data. And so I understand why Governor Evers vetoed it. What I would like to see is the opportunity for us in the Assembly to vote on the Senate Governor Compromise Bill, AB1. And I think we could get there, especially given all the provisions that they wanted to get done through AB1. They're introducing as separate bills anyway. So let's get that compromise bill across the finish line for the people of Wisconsin.
And Calvin, what do you think it's going to take for Democrats and Republicans to come together and take some further action on the pandemic?
Yeah, well, one of the first thing I voted on was AB1 back in January. You know, this addressed some of the backlog with UI claims at DWD. Some of the important things that I thought was protected Wisconsinites from government overreach by prohibiting employers and the Department of Health Services and local health officers from mandating the vaccine or closing places of worship. It also ensured the availability of the COVID vaccine throughout the state by allowing pharmacy students and dentists to administer the vaccine to get it in the people that want it in the arms as fast as possible. It also provided $100 million to help combat the virus. Unfortunately, the governor did veto that, but Assembly Bill 2 and 3, the governor did sign these and will ensure that businesses throughout the state aren't faced with the $431 million state tax because they accepted PPP loans, which is great. I've spoke with business owners in the 35th who have been struggling, and this legislation will help them keep them in business as they work back to get on their feet.
Sure. We've got about 30 seconds left, and I really want to know, Calvin, you are new to the state legislature. You were just elected. What have these first few months been like for you?
Very rewarding and very humbling. I'd like to thank again the people of the 35th for putting their trust in me. But there's a lot of learning to do. I look forward to working with my colleagues across the aisle and in our caucus to do what's best for the people of Wisconsin. So I'm looking forward to the future and doing what's best for the people here.
All right. And very, very briefly, Katrina, is it a new day in Madison? Are you finding more cooperation?
You know, I've been heartened that we're able to get a couple compromises done, and let's keep moving forward. The people of Wisconsin deserve urgent action on COVID-19 relief and getting us out of this pandemic and through it together, and I will continue working for that.
Thank you. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Republican State Representative Calvin Callahan and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland. Our producer is Joy Ratchkramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route51. Next week, Rick Ryer will be our guest host for a conversation with the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point's new chancellor, Thomas Gibson. Until then, we're heading out of town.